Page 377-378. We're in the middle of chapter 10, three lines from the bottom in the Hebrew, and probably the last paragraph. Yes. Last paragraph in the English. We're talking about Teshuvah Ilah, the higher level of Teshuvah. And he said that this comes through basically a gift from above. And is enables the person to say v'chol mo'edecha and really mean it. Okay, when you pass the point of v'chol nashif of all your soul, so comes v'chol mo'edecha, even more than all your soul. And says that he says is a gift from above, and that should then affect a person's Torah. And so we're starting with v'kem l'kiyam kol mitzvos. And so too it is with all of the with the fulfillment of all the mitzvahs. That when a person does a mitzvah, it should also be an expression of a palpable love that the person has towards Hashem in expressing the will of Hashem. Because all mitzvahs are. Why is it that we would do any mitzvah? He said already in chapter 4 that the true fulfillment of all the mitzvahs is as an expression of love of Hashem, and therefore this love that the person has, this Ava Rabba that the person has, is directly related to the Teshuvah Ilah. And he clarifies it further. It says, that he has sanctified us with his commandments. And he's now going to zoom on the word sanctified. Kamei hari at mekudeshes li. That we say before every mitzvah, we say Asher Kiddush Shana, that who has sanctified us. The word sanctify is like in the holy state of matrimony. What happens in this holy state of matrimony is there is a union that is to the exclusion of all others. That's why there's a lot in the news lately. I don't know, maybe things are going down in courts or wherever concerning gay marriage. Mm-hmm. And why is it that Judaism could never sanctify gay marriage or even to recognize such a thing as a gay marriage? Is because the word in Hebrew for marriage is kiddushin, which is a state of holiness. This union that it exists between a husband and a wife is a union which is made through Hashem. Because we see, I'm not being glib, but I'm being glib. Men and women are opposing forces. The psyche and nature of men and women is so opposite one to the other. Comedies written about the relationships that happen between men and women. So how is it possible that you could have these two opposing forces being able to get together? And we know that in the rules of physics, that whenever you have two opposing forces that you're trying to unite, you have to have a greater force than the sum of the two. And then the two are able to work in tandem. The two are able to work together. So in this instance, what really makes the marriage is not the fact that there is a ring put on a lady's finger underneath a chuppah. That's not exactly punk. I mean, that's what the facilitates it. But what does it is really the involvement of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's a statement, a line that I heard. I don't remember where I heard it from, but it says so you have a man and you have a woman, so where's Hashem in this? So the answer is Hashem is in the space between the beds. Okay, which is a very profound statement, because what that says is the space between the beds. What does that mean? This is the whole concept of family purity, of Taras HaMishpacha, is sort of like a catalyst in the whole thing, not just the going to the mikveh, But the whole attitude that goes with the whole month involved in Taras HaMashpacha is what invites Hashem into the marriage. So that, now there's no need to have it. Listen, if you have two guys that are living together, so they're basically the same slobs, you know, so they don't need to have, they're the same person, it's the same idea. They don't need to have a higher force uniting them, as the case may be. So Hashem's not there. Hashem's not involved. Same thing to ladies. Hashem's not involved. Okay? You want to call it whatever you want to call it. Do I personally believe that I should have the right to choose who I would want as a life, the beneficiary of my life insurance policy, or my survivor benefits, or to be able to be included on my health insurance? Yeah, that doesn't bother me. I have no problem with that. But just don't call it marriage. And it's not just semantics. You know, a civil union versus a marriage versus whatever. Don't do anything, you know? You want to have your roommate on your health insurance? Okay, so, you know, if there's some sort of a something formal and it's all written down and it's all contractual and this roommate is not going to be gone in a month and the next one's going to be replaced in a month, so then, okay, I don't see any problem with health insurance, these type of things, but just don't call it kiddushin because it's not. Mm-hmm. And it can never be. Okay, so, and we could talk about this for an hour, but I'm not going to.
This morning.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, come back on Nittel, that's right. Okay, so that's the whole deal, because when the husband puts the ring on the finger and says, Hari at mikudeshes li, there is now a force. And it talks about in the Gemara about this ceremony. Okay, why it is that we don't do double ring ceremonies.
What do you mean?
We don't do, you know what a double ring ceremony is?
No.
You put one on her and she puts one on you.
Okay, fine.
It's called a double ring ceremony.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't
do that.
Are you wearing a wedding ring?
No, I don't wear a wedding ring. I had to talk my family out. I didn't do it.
Yeah, I had to talk my parents out of it too.
Okay, anyway, so I didn't have to talk anybody out because no one was buying it. If I wanted a wedding ring, I would have to buy it myself.
Anyway. You know what I told my dad? Because he said, oh, you know, we'll get your ring. And then later on, he says, oh, you know, you're probably not going to wear it so much, so we won't get it for you. And I told him, I said, you know what signifies that I'm married in our community, that I'm putting on a talus. Mm-hmm. Not that I have a ring.
Okay. Nobody hassled me about it.
So, unless it was a party.
Yeah, nobody has something about it. Anyway, so because what the ceremony does is there's a connection of the there's a drawing close. Okay, it is a fusion. And it says in the Gemara that by giving something back, it could be construed that this is an exchange. Let's say, for example, that the wedding rings are of equal value. Okay, so he gives her something, and basically her giving something back is saying sort of like, it could be construed as, even though it's the furthest thing from what they're thinking, is that I don't need your thing. Here's one for you. Okay, that's why even the woman doesn't even say yes under the chuppah. She doesn't say anything. The expression shtika kahayda dami, that just being quiet is enough of an agreement, because if she objected, she would open up her mouth and object. Because this the ceremony that we do it the way that we do it according to what's going on with spirituality, this is the moment when the ring is put on the finger. It is that's when the fusion moment is. In some circles, not by Lubavitch, they have the two witnesses standing there, and when they put the ring on, so they see the ring is put on, so the two witnesses say, Makudish, Makudish. By Lubavitch, we don't do that. the witnesses just kind of stand there like, you know, a bunch of talks and go, okay, fine, I'm watching this thing go on. Okay? Because that's a declaration. Mm-hmm. I can understand the reason for it. That's a declaration, which the declaration brings it down into a physical concrete everybody should know. It's a sort of like the same thing when a woman comes out of the mikveh, the first thing that she hears is the mikveh lady saying kosher. Because what that does is it concretizes the act and brings it down that it's not just for her, but for the whole entire world also. The actual utterance of that psak din, you might say. That's the seal on it. V'hibachin is kadosh ha'elyon. And this expression, this now, when a person is doing the mitzvahs, and he's doing the mitzvahs as an expression of ava rabba, of great love, of palpable love, is drawn down from the level of kadosh ha'elyon. We said the word mekudeshes. Now, what do we know about kadosh ha'elyon? So he said earlier in a chapter, early in, I think, chapter 19, that he says that where is Kedusha drawn from? Kedusha is drawn from Chachma, Shehu Nikra Kadosh Elyon. That Kedusha is called the supernal holiness. I believe it's chapter 19. And so that means to say that that means to say that the person, when they're in this state, Shenikra Kadosh Elyon, yeah, I was right, chapter 19. Okay. Shehuba, that this state, he says, what did he say back previously? There's my own. Vizehu Klal. The whole sitra kedusha. This is a general rule in all matters of holiness. She'ena elamasha nimshich machachma, which is only drawn down from wisdom. Shenikra kadosh ha'elyon, which is called the supernal level of holiness. Habatal b'metzias bo'arein soy baruchu, which is nullified in its existence to the infiniteness of Hashem, which is enclosed in it and is not considered something for itself. Okay. So this person, when they are in the level of doing mitzvahs, what they feel is a total sense of selflessness. Because what is it that exists at that point when a person is doing the mitzvah? Since it is a sher kiddushana, that they're kaddish, they're tying into this level of supernal holiness, is a state of non-existence. What exists? The mitzvah exists. So that when a person is doing the mitzvah, it's not them anymore. It's the only thing that it exists is the mitzvah. That's why it says, even a person isn't cognizant of this, even a person doesn't have this great ava. If you see a person doing a mitzvah, you should stand up. Okay? Out of respect for the bittul that is being conveyed. And you say, what kind of bittul? Just the fact that the person could have been doing something else. You know, even if a person is doing a mitzvah in a perfunctory manner, out of rote, per se, he still could have had the option not to do it altogether. Mm-hmm. So this, that the person is doing it in this level, so that where the person feels the elokus, so at this point, all that exists is the mitzvah. And remind you again what he said, or the Rebbe emphasized, as that since this is in Tanya, this is not for tzaddikim, this is for everybody. Everybody can achieve this level. Lashon Pirishav Avdolah, She'ena yachol lehislabish teich ilmun b'shum dekuli kamei kalo chashivi. Now when you're talking about mitzvahs are an expression of ratzon ha'elyon. Ratzon is superficial. It affects the world in a superficial manner. Because if you put it on your GPS, on your Kabbalah chart over there, so Ratzon is Keser, and Keser is an expression of Soviv Kolomim. But let's go beyond the jargon. Okay, that's just parroting. Divine will, he says, does not enclose itself in the world per se, in and of itself, but affects the world in an encompassing way, meaning that it's too great to be revealed. And as he said in a bunch of places, in the 40s, and he said in Shar Yechid V'Amuna, that when we use the expression Sovev Kol Omim, stop thinking circles. God is not encompassing the world. Okay, but rather it's a level of Elokus, it's a level of Gilui, revelation, which is too great to be manifest in a revealed way in this world. And the fact that there's a revelation that we can't see doesn't take away from the fact that it's a revelation. Okay, so that the... So this godliness now, and the only way that it is being able to be brought down into this world is by the person doing the mitzvah. And when the person is doing it with these kavanas, that is an expression out of his love of Hashem, so that has the greatest effect on the physical world in and of itself. Because the whole world, the physical world, is kule kamei kalo chashvi. It's totally and completely considered like nothing before Hashem. You can look over there. You can go listen to this shiur online again if you want to, chapter 46. V'gam acharat fila. Now, so this is what's happening when a person is davening. This is when a person does a mitzvah, and he also says when a person is davening. V'gam acharat fila eimim eilecha havai nashi esa. We say that last paragraph after the Shemayna Esrei. And to you, Hashem, I lift up my soul. That means to say, Lehizdafka rucha barucha kol hayom kula. So that when you take your three steps back to cleave to Hashem for a whole day, so that when you take your three steps back, it's not like, okay, breakfast. But rather, when the person takes the three steps back, if they've had a palpable experience in Shema and Shmona Esrei, they should be able to take that with them the whole day. This is what he talked about in chapter 12. That what happens with Joe Benini, that he davens in the morning. Okay, when he's davening, so he put his nefesh of Bahamas to sleep. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he gets done davening, so it's firing like it was like at its birth. And there he is in the middle of the day, in the middle of the business. And he's getting bombarded with all kinds of things that he shouldn't be bombarded with. Not that we're saying who's going to decide what he should be bombarded with, not. But all kinds of things that are in opposition to what he'd been trying to accomplish in his morning davening. So what does the Alter Rebbe recommend in chapter 12? Stop and think what you were doing this morning. If you were there this morning, shouldn't be too hard to get back there again now. Hmm. Just stop a minute. It doesn't even take 5 minutes. Stop a minute and think of the experience that you had while you were davening, and the feeling that you felt while you were davening, and how the only thing that existed was a relationship between you and Hashem. So now that you're bombarded by this thing that you would wish that you weren't being bombarded by, you'll be able to handle it, no problem. Because the only thing that exists is your relationship between you and Hashem. That's the idea of Kiddush Anu. When you walk out of the house, are you still married? But your wife isn't there. That's exactly the point. You're still married. Mm-hmm. You're still Makudish. There's still this unity and bond that's still there. You walked out of the house. You know, your wife is nowhere to be seen. You know what they say? If a man is standing in the woods and his wife is nowhere to be found, is he still wrong?
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. So the relationship is still there. The bond is still there. Just because you're not sitting next to each other or in the same reasonable proximity. Now, on the contrary, that's when the bond has to be really stepped up. Okay? So that when a person is at that point accosted with something which is in violation of this bond, he should be able to stop for a minute. Shouldn't take very long. And to think, wait, I have this bond, I have this connection, And if I'm going to do this, it's going to violate or possibly break that bond. And I don't want that to happen. And this being shoved into my face would not be within the guise of kiddushin. It's not going to make me a holy person. So therefore, I don't want to do it.
It's like Yosef.
Yeah. So the same thing is with everything that a person is accosted with. All these things that are taking, that would be taking the person away from Elokus. Wait, you established a relationship with Hashem this morning. You said Asher Kedishan of a Mitzvah a couple of times this morning. For Al Natilus Yadoyim and for Divrei Sora and for your Talis and for your Tfilin. At least those. Okay, so that's four times Makudish. How many times do you need already? Okay, you only got married once. Yeah, that was enough. This is at least four times in the morning to get your day going. To put into your mind and in your heart that there is this essential bond which is keeping you away from all that other stuff. So here we see what's the difference between Teshuvah Tata and Teshuvah Ilah. Teshuvah Tata, he talked about, he's going to bring it back again up over here. Teshuvah Tata is an expression of hachna, of feeling of humility and downtroddenness and breaking one's spirit. Look what a louse I've been for what all the things that I did. But here, this person doesn't have to do anything wrong to be doing Teshuvah Ilah. Tshuva Ilah is a feeling of, I have a connection to Hashem, and I want that connection to Hashem to be as great as possible. Therefore, I would be embarrassed or humiliated to do anything which would interrupt or, worse, sever that connection. This is like back in chapter 4, way back when, Perek Dalet. And all of this comes through just using your head. The expression Ein Ama Aretz Chosid. Okay, it's Pirkei Avos. Yeah? An ignorant person can't be a chosid. What he's talking about over here, if a person wants to do Tshuva Ilah, he has to be able to use his head. Sorry. A person just learning Aleph Beis and not knowing the simplest levels and concepts of Judaism is not going to be on the level of Tshuva Ilah so fast. And it could very well be that it comes as a gift from above. We know, for example, that the story, there's a Hayyamim for the Shpoila Zayda, that the Shpoila Zayda was known as a Varma Yid. He was a very warm Jew. So they asked him, how is it that he possesses such a radiance of warmth? I'm not talking temperature over here. So he said that by his upshurinish, his father brought him to the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov put his holy hand over his heart and gave him a bracha. And since then, he's felt warm. So this is a matana milamayla. The Baal Shem Tov was able to instill in a three-year-old child a feeling of avarabu, of tshuva ilah. Okay? There aren't many Baal Shem Tovs, and there aren't many Shpoila Zaydas. Okay? So don't wait for somebody to suddenly fall from the sky and put his hand on your chest and say, you too, buddy. So we have to work on it ourselves. Okay, and that's what the rest of the chapter deals with. And he says it starts with what? Thinking. Thinking about the greatness of Hashem from Mamekes Hadas. The Alter Rebbe is really big on this. Mamekes Hadas, the depth of his knowledge, means to the point where he feels it. Okay? To the point where he feels it. Okay, I have my son is right now engaged in preparing for his first test in Smicha. Mm-hmm. He has not had a test probably since he was 12.
Okay. In high school, they didn't test them. You just learned. You learned. The teacher asks you to read. You go on. You go weiter. There's no tests. That's the way yeshivas work. Okay. So he's getting tested. So he says, how do I know when I'll be tested? How do I know when I'll be ready? I said, well, how many times have you gone over it already? Right. And he said, many times already. Okay. So I said, the question I said to him is, can you see it at once? When you can see it at once, then you know you're ready to get tested. Okay, that's basically what the guy is looking for, what the rabbi is looking for when he asks the question, does the student know? If he knows the right answer, not the right answer, that's already half of it, maybe less. What the rabbi wants to see is he looking in the right place for it? Mm-hmm. You know, because in his mind he sees, oh, I remember seeing that. Okay, so that's the way, technically speaking, our Judaism should be. With everything. Okay? Everything that we learn, you should learn it to the point where you see it. That's called das. Mm-hmm.
Trying to catch
up. Okay. Such that
see it, that it clicks and you can explain it? You could really... I'm trying to figure out what that means.
So it's like I'm looking at a page right now.
Yeah, just like you have this page in front of you. You should be able to see after the whole, you know. You should be able to see the concept more. You don't care about it. If you have a photographic memory, right. Just go click.
I don't think you meant
that. And then no, I didn't mean that.
I think you meant though.
That you should be able to see the concept. And when someone asks, and in his case, since he's learning Basar B'Chalav. Okay, and I asked him, so what are you supposed to do with an udder?
Yeah.
Okay, so he said, he knows, he says, Karasa Shasiva Erevadecha Gala Kaisel. It just like rolled out of his mouth. Like I asked him, how much is 2 and 2? He'd say 4. Okay, it's like, of course, what you do with an udder is you have to cut it crosswise and press it so that anything liquid that's in there comes out. You know, so that's, you know. Because you can see what the whole idea of an udder, having milk inside of it.
You don't want that.
Not that I think I would want to eat the thing, but...
You could.
I suppose prepared properly, it probably is delicious. I mean, you know, anyway. That's one body part I've never eaten on an animal, so...
Is that even, like, legal?
When does the
I don't know if you get it in this country.
When does it become hollow?
When it's been...
Secreted?
When it leaves.
When it leaves. Yeah, but you can't bite into a. Oh, if you take an udder and just cook it, it's a dairy
meat.
Cow.
It's meat.
If you take an udder and just cook it, so the milk is within the chambers of
the glands
glands over there. So you're cooking milk and meat together. Oh. You have to press the milk out of the meat. Okay. You would not be allowed to drink the milk that you press out of the milk, but out of the meat. But that's what you have to do, and if you want to eat the thing. So, they say that it tastes like basar b'chalav.
I see.
So, oh, you see. Good. Okay.
You can know what to do. You have... Oh, I almost thought that was bina.
This is das.
You would die.
This is das, as you know das. What to do okay. with it. Yes.
You
know what to do about it. And you're thinking about godless habera to the point where you know what to do with it. It's all very well to sit and philosophize and to become an academician, but what are you doing with the information?
It's supposed to be able to use it.
You know, every class I teach, I always try to get back to, okay, now I've given you, this is the Rebbe Shita, I've given you a whole bunch of facts, what are you going to do with them? Because if you're just sticking them in the file, it's just like for Jewish trivia, so that trivializes it. What are you doing with this information? This is Torah, Lashon, Hayra. Torah is a lesson. I have to be able to close the book and do something with it. Mm-hmm. With Tanya, it's easy because the whole book is a book of lessons. Anyway. Now, so he says that specifically when you've written the preparation of the two before and the Psuki Dezimrat, which is, we said before, that davening is like a ladder and you can't just jump into a Shmaina Esrei. You have to work up to it. You have to work up to the feeling of self-abnegation that a person is supposed to feel, like an eved before a master, that type of a thing. So that requires thinking during the davening.
And we know, for example, since we're going to call now this davening is going to be a level of tshuva ilah, the higher level of tshuva, we know you can't get to tshuva ilah if you didn't do tshuva tata first, because we're not talking about matanis milamayla, we're not talking about shpeila zaydis over here, we're talking about Joe Average. And Joe Average has to go up the ladder, and before he goes up the ladder, or he has to at least get a ladder, at least. And this is what it says there is in the Mishnah. Ain aimdim lispal elam v'teich kevid reish. Upir shashi hachna. That's what it says. It's going back to chapter 7. You have to do chapter 7 before you could do chapter 10. What do we say over there? And here also, that a person should daven, he can only daven in an excessive heavy-headedness. And Rashi says, b'hachna, a feeling of subjugation. Huvachin eschuvah tata, lo'er rachamim hanal. And this whole thing is that why is it that a person is doing this is in order to arouse an expression of rachmanis from Hashem. If the person at least could get into Hashem's rachmanis, what's he have? You're talking Yud Gimel Midas HaRachmim, like you said in chapter 8. Yud Gimel Midas HaRachmim, if you could tap into that, is nothing to slouch. That's really doing pretty good. If a person's able to achieve that in his daffing, it has a great. That's my phone. Okay. Kiri Yalef Hasan v'Gemara Mikra Diksiv Hu Mars Nefesh. As it says over there in the Gemara, and is brought down from the Pesukim, that we're really just absolutely proving this, that this is an expression of bitterness of the soul.
From Chana.
Pardon?
From Chana.
Yeah. I came to Brisa Sham, and so too also in the Brisa that's mentioned there. He quoted the Mishnah. And now he's quoting the Brisa that's in that same Gemara. Tana Rabbanan. Einem lispala elam etech simcha. It's also in Masechta Brachos. It says that you can only daven if you're happy. So you're supposed to be a schizoid over here. You're supposed to feel downtrodden and dejected and feel happy. Yes, I'm happy that I'm downtrodden and dejected. What is that talking about? How could a person do such a thing? Ein mispalin elamitech simcha. When you daven, you have to be happy. Foremost and forthright. That's the key. And that's the key behind everything involving Chassidus. The major principle, number one, I don't know, major one, if you put numbers on him, Baal Shem Tov, major postulate, is Yivdu Hashem B'Simcha. Everything you do has to be done with joy. Mm-hmm. Okay, and by the Baal Shem Tov, even the Vidui on Yom Kippur was done with joy. Because mm-hmm. You know Hashem's going to forgive you. So why should you wouldn't be happy? Of course you'd be happy. Okay, you have this wonderful tone. I'm so happy I sinned. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. You know,
so. I'm thinking of a coin in Kippur. He's doing vidui on the cow on his bull once, twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And the goat, and it's uh-huh. Because the whole nation is counting on it to work. We're happy that there's a mechanism.
Yep.
Basically, there's a way.
That's basically it. Yeah.
See why.
Okay. So, but wait a minute. I don't have time in the morning. That's my problem. I don't have time in the morning. I'm a working man. I'm Joe Average. I can't sit there and do both. I only have time for one. So which one should I do? So obviously, b'simcha. So what about the hachana, the preparation? The frigid of a rice, that the preparation is more important than the actual doing. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get anywhere. I can't get on the roof unless I go get the ladder. I don't have time to get the ladder. I only have time to get on the roof. How's that going to work? Yeah.
Live underground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so what does he say here? V'ashe v'dor yosem hazeh she'ein hakil yachulin lahapich libam v'karega min hakatsa. It says not everybody has the ability to switch from a sense of contriteness or how far their sins have taken them to be a master of account and then to switch into the joy mode. And it's interesting, he uses the expression Dor Yasum Hazad, this orphan generation. What is an orphan? A person who doesn't have a mother and a father. And Gabe says, what are you talking about? This generation is orphaned. Yeah, people like the Alta Rabbit. What kind of orphaned? You know, you hear about these funerals of when a Goggle dies. Right. Passes on. They say, we are left as you say, mean we don't have any leaders to take care of us. Who's going to take care of this orphan generation? Okay? The Alta Rebbe is writing in here. Yeah. The Alta Rebbe is good enough for me.
And look at his contemporaries,
too. Yeah. The whole Chevra Kedisha over there. We're talking about orphan generation. Okay? So orphan means that they have no Chachma and Bina. Chachma and Bina is referred to as Av Ve'Em. We, in the time of the Alter Rebbe, wrote, and he referred to his generation as Akvasa de Mashiach, the heels of the Mashiach.
Where are we?
Yeah, we're like kind of off on the floor someplace. Yes, down. We're really down there. Okay, we're not even the calluses at this point.
The ones that fell off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, yes, we're the remnants of the pumice stones. So the... So he says, in this orphan generation, that we don't have the Chochmah and the Bina. And he was talking about his generation. We don't have, we're not like the Tanoim that could spend 9 hours davening and then be able to make a living and be able to start participating in making Mishnayos. Which that itself is a full day job. So the fact that they were able to spend 9 hours a day davening is because they had Chochmah and Bina. They had it. And it talks about in the Gemara, how did they learn? Yeah, they didn't have to review things 100 times. They could learn it once and they would remember it. You know, their business was blessed. They only had to work a very short time. Okay, because of where they were, where their focus was. We don't have people davening 9 hours a day nowadays. The big Rebbes around the world, they're not davening 9 hours a day. The Lubavitcher Rebbe did not daven 9 hours a day. Okay, so... this is what makes us an orphan generation. Abba Prat, now that we're 200 years later, and the darkness has doubled and more doubled. The expression is, when is it darkest? Is right before it starts getting light. So we're for sure, we're way, way down there. So he says, so what do we do over now? So what should we do? We don't have the ability to flip switches like this and to spend the time that it takes to even to be able to flip the switch. Mm-hmm. He says, he recommends saying Tikkun Chatzos. You'll wake up a little earlier.
So that's your time to be...
Yeah, that's when you have the Hachna. Uh-huh. Now, how many people do you know do Tikkun Chatzos?
I don't
know anybody.
It's helped to start doing our learning. Helps when you start davening it.
Yeah, okay.
It helps. It helped.
Tikkun Chatzos means you wake up like 3 o'clock in the morning. You sit on the floor. With ashes on your forehead, and you mourn the loss of the Beis Hamikdash. You say what horrible things are going on, and you feel really bad about it, and then you sit and learn until time to go daven shachris. Okay? We're not doing that in this generation.
Well, I hear there's like rebbes that will go by the kaisel and do it.
Okay.
That's their stroke.
Not all morning. Not all. Until sunrise.
Sunrise is a lot earlier in Eretz Yisrael. Always, the whole year. Even during daily talking, savings time. And then you go back to bed, right? Okay, good. You know, if you got the time for such things. It says, so instead of saying Tikkun Chatzos, so now say Kriya Shema Almita. You have to say Kriya Shema Almita before you go to sleep. So, and we have over there, we have the thing in the Lubavitch Siddur. It has the Hiratzon, I take upon myself all the time, if I didn't do this mitzvah properly or that mitzvah properly, to throw that in as well. And he says, and if you can't do that, listen, you know, by the time you get to say Kriya Shema, so it's late, you're tired, you're falling asleep on the Kriya Shema, you're saying the words, and as soon as you're going to start thinking about it, you're going to fall asleep. So he says, Mishiyev Sharlo b'chol lailok upon him, lo yiftach mepamachet b'shvua, lifnei yom Shabbos. Says, you can't do it every night. Okay, it's Thursday night. See if you can spend a little time. Because Friday night, you don't have to do this type of stuff. Friday night would be perfect because you haven't got nothing to do. You know,
so I learn a lot.
Yeah, Friday night you could do the Kriya Shema, but the parts that you have to do that would be like this, where we don't say them on Friday night.
Right.
So you have to do it Thursday night. Okay, once a week, you know, do this. And the Rebbe actually negated this as well. The Rebbe in 1984 in a Sicha said that he didn't like the idea that's talked about in chapters 26 and 29 about the planned depression.
Yeah.
He didn't like that. And they also didn't like this idea of having times when a person should feel a achna and a down deck. It says if you got time to be down, you have time to be happy too.
Right.
So spend the time rather being happy. He says, and there's an easy way of doing this, is by keeping Shabbos. Why is it that the person is doing this Tikkun Chatzos business specifically before Shabbos? It's because Shabbos is the same letters, Tashav, to return. Okay? And a person who keeps Shabbos properly, again, we're talking, you got to learn, is considered as having done Shuvah Ilah. Because it's one thing to keep Shabbos. You call it Shabbos. We talked about this before. The litmus test of a person's religiosity is Shomer Shabbos. Your baker has to be Shomer Shabbos. Your butcher has to be Shomer Shabbos. Mm-hmm. You call a person, is this person from? Is he a Shomer Shabbos? Because you have to devote 20% of your week to keeping Shabbos. But that's just baseline. If you wanted to keep Shabbos properly, Hilchus Shabbos takes up a whole book in Shulchan Aruch. Mm. Okay, it's a whole Masechta in Gemara.
24 chapters.
Yeah, there's a whole... the amount that's written on Hilchus Shabbos, you know, is an ongoing process. I just got a book in the mail recently. It was actually a pretty good interview of a person who wrote about internet commerce on Shabbos. You have a business, and the business is set up that it runs, that people buy stuff from you on from the internet, from your website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is. Are you allowed to sell things to somebody on Shabbos? Good, there are problems that are, it's not so pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's a question, but there are simple answers. How to deal with it. So ask your local rabbi if you ever set up an internet business. Even Chabad.org does not close on Shabbos. And the donation page, I pretty much guarantee, even though I never tried it, I bet that the donations page on Chabad.org works really well for those hours that it's Shabbos.
Doesn't it work like a timer?
Nope. Damn. Because Shabbos worldwide is 48 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So you have it not take donations for 48 hours?
No, I'm thinking of a timer the way it's pretty, it knows what it's a program. Knows what to do.
Yeah.
Your timer knows when to go on.
You happen to be right now, it's Shabbos, and therefore we can't take donations from you. No, I don't think so.
No, I'm meaning that in the program where I'm saying, when you set your manual timer before Shabbos, you've told the machine what to do and when to do it, and it does.
Yeah, you're not doing anything. That's why it's no problem.
You're not doing anything. It's the same thing. It's like a timer.
Correct.
In that sense, it's not like it's
right.
It's just like a robot.
It is a robot.
It doesn't know, and it doesn't have any.
Right. And the same thing also. I don't want to aggress about this too much. Also, the same thing with internet business. When this person clicks on your website and buys the schmants that you're selling it, and the money goes into your account, so that's not called buying in Hebrew.
No Kenyan.
There's no Kenyan made.
Yeah.
The Kenyan's not made until it lands on his front door, and that's not happening for a while.
Not even a goy involved.
There's nothing. It's less. It's a machine.
It's a machine.
Right. Oh. Okay. Anyway, Tashav Enosh. V'Shabbos Isi is Tashav Enosh. Ki Shabbos Hu Aliyas Ha'Olam Muslim Mekarim. Because what happens on Shabbos? On Shabbos, the world reverts back to its source. So we talk about what is forbidden on Shabbos, the Lamites Malachis. You know, when you talk about what is you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. Okay, that couch that's sitting over there, that weighs probably close to 100 pounds, you'd be allowed to take it and carry it downstairs, and when you got through carrying it downstairs, you could carry it back upstairs too.
Then do it again.
Yeah, on Shabbos. Okay? Mm-hmm. But to walk outside with a tissue in your pocket, that's malacha. So the definition of work, so the word work is not really a proper concept. It's called malacha, but what it means is creative.
Or destructive.
Okay? The word, even the destruction is for the purpose of creation. Mm. So just to destroy, you're allowed to destroy. But if you're destroying for the purpose of building, so you're not allowed to. Because it's the idea of creative. Things have to establish, go back to the status quo of what they is. So this couch is in a Yerushus HaYachid. When you move it downstairs, it's still in a Yerushus HaYachid. The tissue was in a Yerushus HaYachid. You carry it outside. Now it's in a Yerushus HaRabim. You've changed its status quo.
Was genius.
Okay. Shabbos current. Well, Prat, Tfilah Shabbos Vidal specifically, where do you have the greatest expression of Teshuvah is by the davening on Shabbos, which is why davening can take so much longer and should take so much longer. Shuvah Eli Kigal Ticha. This is what it says, return to me because I will redeem you. Since I have wiped away your transgressions like a cloud. Meaning, what does it take for a cloud to move? Just blow on it, the cloud moves. Who avoids a sitra achra, that this is havaras a sitra achra, this is the removal of the forces of evil. Galticha min achatzonim, I will redeem you from the external forces. Bis'eris rachamim elyonim, with a revelation of tremendous divine mercy. And how does that all start? Is Bisarusa de Latata, Bechuva Tata Kanal. You got to do chapter 7. Okay, you have to be the start. Hashem says, Piskuli Kachudishal Machad. Open up to me like the hole of a needle. And I'll open you up, and I'll open up like the Shari Ha'ulam, which were 60 amas wide. You do a pinhole, Hashem does 60 amas. Two pinholes, 120 amas. Okay? So that Hashem says, you do it first. We have to do, this is a world of action. Hashem wants to help. Hashem is going to help. Hashem is going to give. We have to show we want it. The expression is no bread of laziness over here. The forces of evil were put into this world for us to overcome, so that we should be able to say we accomplished something. Because when we do it, we're doing it. Azai, shuva elai, b'tshuva ilah. That once a person has done the initial process, so then the tshuva ilah is able to take place. To be continued.